Headline Jet magazine going back decades. Aretha says she'll go Angela's bond if permitted, offering to pay whether it's $100,000 or $250,000 to free Angela Davis. Farah Jasmine Griffin, professor of English and comparative literature and African American studies at Columbia University, among her books, If You Can't Be Free, Be a Mystery, In Search of Billie Holiday, and Mark Anthony Neal, Duke University professor, author of many books. And that does it for our show as we go out with respect. Democracy Now! Is a job opening for a broadcast engineer here in New York City. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Robbie Caron, Laura Gottesdiener, Carla Wills. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Black on Black Startups from the Ground Up on Saturday, August 18th at King Elementary School in Portland. Black on Black Startups from the Ground Up is focused on Black businesses and Black spaces and is hosted by the 2018 Black Male Achievement Summer Youth Experience Cohort. Again, that's Black on Black Startups from the Ground Up on Saturday, August 18th at King Elementary School, 4906 Northeast 6 in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage underneath Community Events.
Tune in on Thursday, August 31st at 8 p.m. to celebrate the queer programmers and the queer community of KBOO as part of our 50th anniversary. Emma Lugo of Transpositive will host this special on-air program. You can join us that night at the Queer Community Open House here at KBOO at 20 Southeast Avenue from 7 to 10 p.m. on August 31st. More information about the Queer Community Open House and anniversary programming is available at kboo.fm.
The time is 5:01 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Oregon Symphony, located at 909 Southwest Washington Street in downtown Portland, presenting Gary Trudeau, political cartoonist and creator of Doonesbury Comics, sharing from his latest book, Sad, Doonesbury in the Time of Trump, Tuesday, October 16th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and more information available by phone at 503-228-1353. Or online at orsymphony.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, City Council candidate Joanne Hardesty has released documents proving that she paid her Portland business taxes.
A Black student was arrested in Arizona for wearing a bandana to school.
And in international news, the death toll of the flooding in Kerala, India continues to rise.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 17th, 2018. I'm Ani.
And I'm Yasmin. On Thursday, City Council candidate Joanne Hardesty released documents to confirm that she has paid her Portland business taxes for the last 3 years. This was in response to a charge alleged by Multnomah County Commissioner Loretta Smith. Smith is Hardesty's opponent in the race for the City Council seat vacated by departing Commissioner Dan Saltzman. On Wednesday, the Smith campaign accused Hardesty of failing to register her business and implied that she may not have paid the required business taxes. Ann Nguyen, Hardesty's campaign manager, called the Smith campaign's request, quote, a cheap trick and typical establishment dirty tactic to distract voters, unquote. The released documents show that Hardesty's consulting business fell below the threshold level for business taxes and that Hardesty paid all applicable federal and state income taxes. Hardesty and Smith placed first and second, respectively, in May's Portland City Council primary. They will face off against each other in November. Hardesty defeated Smith by 18 percentage points, But regardless of who wins this fall's election, Portland will have a woman of color as commissioner for the very first time.
Video footage posted online today shows a black student at an Arizona high school being arrested for violating a non-existent rule in the school's dress code. The incident occurred at Apache Junction High School in Pinal County, Arizona, where the student refused to remove a bandana tied around his forehead. The student can be heard on video saying, "Why don't you just take me out now and save yourself the trouble, bro?" A crowd of students formed objecting the arbitrary harassment of the student, and a verbal altercation ensued as an officer tried to remove the student's backpack. The police department eventually arrested four students at the high school, charging them with suspicion of disrupting an educational institution, disorderly conduct, and drug paraphernalia. The students were handcuffed and referred to the Pinal County Juvenile Court System. The Root quoted the targeted student saying, "I could have took off the bandana, I really could have. But at the end of the day, they tried to tell me I couldn't be me, knowing damn well I wear that bandana all the time." In related news, an alert police officer in Chatsworth, Georgia, used a taser to bring down 87-year-old Martha Al-Bashara, who was observed using a small knife to cut dandelions.
More than 324 people have died in the South Indian state of Kerala in what has become the worst flooding disaster in nearly a century. Officials say monsoon rains are the heaviest in the area since 1924. Many roads have been damaged, and mobile phone networks are down. Officials estimate that about 6,000 miles of roads have been submerged in water or buried by landslides. Over 220,000 people have been displaced by the torrential rains, and 1,500 emergency relief camps have been set up in the area. Annual monsoons in Kerala are common, but this year, the state has received 37.5% more rainfall than usual. Some districts, such as Idukki, received 83.5% more rain than average. Many residents have used social media to beg for aid, while some even included their GPS coordinates to help guide rescuers. In a Facebook video that went viral, Ajo Varghese said, quote, "My family and neighboring families are in trouble with flood. No water and food. Not able to communicate from afternoon. Mobile phones are not reachable and switch off. Please help. No rescue is available," unquote. The Indian military has deployed hundreds of troops to help in the disaster. The Central Cochin Airport has been closed, further complicating rescue efforts. Helicopters have airlifted stranded families from the rooftops of their homes and rescued several survivors holding onto floating debris in the rising waters. Casualty numbers are expected to rise further.
And now it's time for the Middle East Minute with Alan Minsky, produced out of the studios of KPFK. On today's episode, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo forms the Iran Action Group.
This is the Middle East Minute Plus, and I am Salim Shahadeh. The U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has created the Iran Action Group. During a press conference on the matter, he said, quote, "We are committed to a whole-of-government effort to change the Iranian regime's behavior, and the Iran Action Group will ensure that the Department of State will remain closely synchronized with our interagency partners." Close quote. In May, Trump announced that the U.S. was withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal and imposed new sanctions on Iran. Saudi Arabia has been waging a wave of mass arrests against prominent scholars, intellectuals, and human rights activists since September with the aim of removing opposition to Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's policies. Thousands of political and religious oppositional figures have been arrested. Bin Salman has taken to openly criticizing Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and other rights groups that condemn his attacks on freedom of expression in Saudi Arabia. Last week, Saudi forces arrested renowned cleric Sheikh Nasser al-Omar for rejecting U.S. military bases' presence on Saudi soil. Prominent Islamic scholar Sheikh Sulman Dawush died under torture in a Saudi jail after 2 years of incarceration. And lastly, this weekend marks the beginning of Hajj, the pilgrimage for Muslims to travel to Mecca to undertake a series of rituals. Saudi Arabian authorities which oversee Hajj preparations, are expecting over 2 million Muslims to participate in this year's Hajj. Also taking place at this time is Eid al-Adha, which lasts for 3 days and concludes the pilgrimage to Mecca. It commemorates Abraham's willingness to obey God by sacrificing his son. This has been the Middle East Minute Plus, a joint production of KPFK and Jewish Voice for Peace.
A Michigan state legislator has apologized after making racist remarks against her Asian American opponent for state senate. Representative Betty Cook Scott used racial slurs when referring to her opponent, Representative Stephanie Chang, during a recent Democratic primary. Witnesses said Scott told voters, quote, "Vote for me, don't vote for the Ching Chong," unquote. She also allegedly told one voter, quote, "Thanks for voting for me. You don't need to vote for that Ching Chang," unquote. Witnesses also said Scott later added, quote, "These immigrants from China are coming over and taking our community from us," unquote. Chang responded to the comments in a statement saying, quote, "I'm disappointed that an elected official and colleague would make comments that are offensive to the Asian American community and immigrants, and even voters in her own district that she represents," unquote. Chang added that the issue is not about her, but rather about, quote, "respect for all communities," unquote. The Michigan Democratic Party chairman, Brandon Dillon, said that her remarks, quote, "go against all the values of the Democratic Party. There is no place in our state or our party for bigotry and discrimination. We at the Michigan Democratic Party are deeply offended by these statements and the attitude behind them. We expect better from anyone who wants to call themselves a Michigan Democrat. If an individual doesn't share our fundamental values of tolerance, decency, and respect, they should find another party," unquote. The nonpartisan group APIA Vote Michigan also condemned Scott's behavior in a statement saying, quote, "Elected officials should be held to high standards of professional conduct and respect people of all racial and ethnic backgrounds. No elected official or candidate for office, regardless of political affiliation, should use stereotypical imagery or language. The use of these stereotypes is counter to the progress our country has made over past decades to encourage respect for all communities," unquote. Scott, who is in her third term in the Michigan State House, apologized in a statement through her attorney, Bill Noakes. Scott said, quote, "I deeply regret the comments I made that have proven hurtful to so many. Those are words I never should have said. I humbly apologize to Representative Chang, her husband, Mr. Gray, and to the broader Asian American community for those disparaging remarks. In the divisive age we find ourselves in, I should not contribute further to that divisiveness. I have reached out to Representative Chang to meet with her so that I may apologize to her in person. I pray she and the Asian American community can find it in their hearts to forgive me," unquote. Representative Chang said she is looking forward to meeting with Scott next week and hopes the incident can serve as a teaching moment for Scott and others.
An 8.5-foot-tall bronze statue of Baphomet was temporarily erected at the State Capitol building in Little Rock, Arkansas. Nearly 150 people attended the unveiling. Dozens of satanic worshipers gathered round to celebrate the statue and to protest the Ten Commandments monument, also on display at the state capitol. The unveiling was met with Christian counter-protesters, including a Republican politician who led the group. Republican Senator Jason Rappert led the campaign to install the Ten Commandments monument at the state capitol. The senator spoke up about the new statue, saying that he respected the Satanists' rights to freedom of speech, but claimed that the worshippers are extremists. The Ten Commandments monument is temporary. However, the Satanic monument wants to set an example that if you have one religious monument, there should be others as well. The Satanic Temple sent letters to Arkansas legislators asking for the permanent display of their statue. No official has replied to their request. Additionally, the Satanic Temple made attempts at filing a lawsuit concerning the monument against the state capitol, claiming it was religious discrimination. The unveiling of the statue also brought atheist protesters and speakers who advocated that the existing Ten Commandments monument went against the rule of separation of church and state.
Up next, we hear from Climate Connections, produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. For today, Dulcie Taylor was moved by photos of people boating down the sidewalk.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. rode down Main Street, your dinghy, a canoe, save your neighbor and his dog stranded on a roof.
In 2015, catastrophic storms flooded parts of South Carolina. It's singer-songwriter Dulcie Taylor's home state. She was shocked to see images of people boating down streets where she once walked.
I kept hearing people call storms like that thousand-year storms, just meaning it should be that rare.
It made her think about just how long a thousand years is.
I thought, good grief, that's halfway to Jesus.
That inspired her to write a new song called Halfway to Jesus. It describes the extreme weather events growing more common with climate change. The song also encourages people to act.
I think music can reach a lot of people, sometimes when just cold hard facts don't.
Well, it ain't like we haven't been warned. Now we're living through thousand year storms. Looking back, where does that leave us? Halfway to Jesus.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Current Cast is a daily piece highlighting one of our most precious resources, that is fresh water. On today's episode, plastic that ends up in the Great Lakes.
Getting the drift about plastic pollution on this Current Cast. Almost 22 million pounds of plastic are washed or blown into the Great Lakes each year. Much of that ends up on shorelines far from where it started. Matthew Hoffman of the Rochester Institute of Technology says Chicago's pollution often drifts across the lake to Michigan. Particles from Detroit end up near Buffalo, and debris from Toronto floats across the border toward Rochester. So tackling the problem requires communities across the region to work together.
If you want to reduce pollution on a particular beach, you would not only have to make sure people don't drop things there when they're visiting,
but that people upstream and across the lake are being careful as well. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30. That's followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is expected to be sunny in the Portland area, with a high in the mid-80s. East of the Cascades and Hood River, it will also be sunny, with a high of 91 degrees. Today in history, the 1865 Memphis earthquake struck southwest Tennessee near the Mississippi River. Soon after the quake hit, observers said the earth appeared to undulate and waves formed in nearby rivers. The quote of the day is from the late Aretha Franklin, who said, quote, "We have the power. We are very resourceful. Women absolutely deserve respect. I think women and children and older people are the three least respected groups in our society."
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture. On this episode, Navajo chapter coordinators are concerned that the tribe's voter purge will discourage young voters and the Spirit Lake Nation wind turbine project.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As the August 28th primary nears on the Navajo Nation, which includes the race for president, issues are raised about the cancellation of registrations of more than 52,000 Navajo voters. Registered members of the tribe who did not vote in the 2014 general election and the 2016 chapter election were purged from the rolls. Charlene Wallace is troubled that younger generations, especially students away at college, may now be discouraged in taking part in Navajo Nation elections.
Right now, my only concern is our younger folks. And I've got one individual that came into my office. She had been purged after voting one time.
Wallace is the chapter coordinator for Cottonwood, located near Chinle, Arizona. More than 500 voters from her chapter house were purged. Wallace hopes young people will re-register.
From the point of view from the younger folks, you know, they get disappointed when they are treated this way and they don't want to come back to the chapters to, you know, to support the Navajo Nation.
The reason behind the purge is due to law, according to the Navajo Board of Election Supervisors. The board voted in January to cancel the registrations, citing voters were given a 30-day notice about their registration status. Marvin Harrison is chair of the Board of Election Supervisors.
In our policy, it states that the election office provides a voter cancellation, which is people refer that to as purge. Because of some of the funding issues and some of the staff turnover back in February, we didn't do the purge till late fall. But once staff and funding came available, we proceeded with it.
Harrison says it's important for voters to update their names, addresses, and chapter affiliations. Voter registration is now closed for the primary. People who did not make the July 30th registration deadline for the primary still have a chance to vote in the November general election, with registration opening next month. As of August, more than 93,000 voters were registered, according to the Navajo Nation Administration. The average voter turnout in Navajo Nation elections is typically less than 50%. The U.S. Department of Energy has awarded $1 million to help the Spirit Lake Tribe install a wind turbine on the Fort Totten Reservation in North Dakota. The tribe will fund an additional $3 million for the project. It's expected to provide more than 60% of the tribe's energy needs and help the tribe save thousands of dollars annually. The Spirit Lake project was one of 15 selected nationwide. The department announced this week nearly $9 million in funding for the tribal energy infrastructure projects. The funding is intended to help Native Americans and Alaska Native communities reduce or stabilize energy costs, as well as increase energy security. The Ponca Tribe of Nebraska recently dedicated a statue of Chief Standing Bear. A ceremony was held at the tribe's annual powwow. People from the Nebraska tribe and members from the Ponca Tribe of Oklahoma took part in the ceremony. Chief Standing Bear is well known for standing up for his people and their homeland in the 1800s, which was reflected by speakers at the unveiling of the bronze statue. The Santa Fe Indian Market is kicking off this week in New Mexico. The more than 90-year-old Native art market attracts people from around the world to the Southwest. Held each August, more than 1,000 artists from the U.S. and Canada showcase their work. Buyers, collectors, and gallery owners are among the many visitors who have the opportunity to meet the artists and learn about their culture and work firsthand. Indian Market Week events also include film, music, and fashion. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by Freedom Lodge, presenting Body and Earth, the future of Native wellness, with leaders including Chief Arvo Looking Horse, sharing wisdom which protects our lives and lands, September 12th through the 15th, Mystic Lake Casino. Registration through September 12th at bodyandearth.org.
And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at sanofsky.com.
Native Voice 1.
Yesterday, families of the victims of the MAX train attack announced a settlement with GoFundMe. After the May 2017 attack, in which a man killed two people and injured a third, a Portland restaurateur set up an account on GoFundMe that eventually raised $1.6 million. GoFundMe is a privately held, for-profit company and, according to the family's announcement, made nearly $50,000 in fees from the TriMet Heroes Fund. The absence of established protocols at GoFundMe required that the victims' families decide amongst themselves how the funds should be shared. The family statement called that, quote, an impossible and cruel task, unquote. Micah Fletcher, the only victim to survive the attack, has already given his share of the fund to the other two families.
Up next, we hear from Black History 365, produced in the studios of KPFT Houston. Black History 365 celebrates Black achievements and honors Black history for every day of the year. On today's episode, the first Miss Black USA pageant.
Black history is happening every day. It's time to start thinking of it outside of a day or a week or a month. We hope to inspire you by enlightening you with those people and events that should be learned from and forever remembered.
Today is August 17th. On this day in 1968, the very first Miss Black USA pageant was held in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Founded in 1968 by J. Morris Anderson, the Miss Black America pageant was developed to reverse the negative propaganda of the Black woman and her role in America. 19-year-old Sandra Williams of Pennsylvania was crowned the pageant's first winner.
Achievements and events are not confined to the past. Make sure to etch your own path in the pantheon of human history. This has been Black History Month 365. BAM 365, where you find every
you have 2 minutes anyways.
Black history is made.
And now it's time for Labor History in 2 from host Rick Smith. In today's episode, the 1985 worker strike at the Hormel plant.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1985. That was the day that workers at the Hormel plant in Austin, Minnesota, went out on strike. They were members of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, Local P9. Hormel had slashed workers' wages by 23% during the early 1980s. Benefits were also diminished and incentive programs rolled back. These changes cut deeply into the Hormel workers' earnings. What had been considered a good job was changing drastically. This was the story for many workers in Reagan-era America. The 3,500 Hormel workers voted overwhelmingly to strike. The National UFCW discouraged the action. The strike lasted more than a year. Strikebreakers were brought in, including some of the union members who crossed the picket line to return to work. The National Guard was called in to keep the peace between strikers and the scabs. After a year, the strike went down in defeat. Even after the strike, many of the workers were not called back to work. They were put on waiting lists for a job to reopen. Some never returned to the plant. 25 years after the strike, the Austin Daily Herald staff wrote, quote, "What resulted was a bitter, drawn-out labor dispute that drastically impacted the community, from workers who lost their jobs to families that were torn apart by the picket lines." The strike became the feature of a documentary by Barbara Koppel. In 1990, the documentary American Dream won the Academy Award. The film tells the story of the Hormel strike as a window into the tragic experiences of many workers during the 1980s. The film was made on a shoestring budget. Singer Bruce Springsteen provided $25,000 to help support this important film. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
KGW reported that the Mukilteo community in Washington State is fighting to support a family after a devastating accident left a local electrician near death. Rod LaFontaine is a standard hard-working family man who puts in a 60-hour work week or more to support his wife and two sons. He started a small electrical business in Mukilteo called Northwest Native Electrical. A high-voltage electrical panel that Rod was working on last month arc-flashed, sending 480 volts straight into his body. The temperature of that split-second flash was estimated by an expert to be around 35,000 degrees, four times hotter than the surface of the sun. Rod said, "I remember being on fire and running outside. I remember waiting for the ambulance and not realizing how bad I was burned." His wife, Marion, added, "When we got to the hospital, the doctor came in and told us he shouldn't have survived his wounds." Rob suffered second and third degree burns to almost half his body. After three surgeries and nearly a month in Harbor View Medical Center's intensive care burn unit, Rob is almost ready to go home. His wife said, "We're just grateful that he's a miracle, that God gave him a miracle." Rod's business has contracts it still needs to honor that he cannot afford to lose. He is to be able to complete those jobs, but now is not sure how, as his full recovery will likely take months. Rod said, "My priorities need to change. I can't focus so much on work now. It has to be more about family." A friend has set up a GoFundMe page for the family called Support Rod's Family. It has raised about $20,000 in 16 days.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Summer Barraza, Lucas Campbell, Yasmin Kobanoglu, Joe Meyer, and Teresa Mitchell. The producers are Yasmin Kobanoglu and Teresa Mitchell. Our engineer is Mike Fataklis. The acting KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs directors are Sam Bowman and Teresa Mitchell. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu.
And I'm Ani Haynes. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO, 7 o'clock, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 o'clock, More Talk Radio welcomes sociologist and author Margaret Hagerman to talk about her book, White Kids, an examination of how affluent white children think about race. At 9 o'clock, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of great issues of our times. And at 10 o'clock, Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein interviews ecologist Charlie Crisafulli while hiking in the Hummocks Trail on Mount St. Helens. And then at 11 o'clock, On the Ground Radio hears counter-protesters' voices at the Unite the Right rally at the White House.